SaaS Backwards is sponsored by Austin Lawrence Group, specializing in demand gen for SaaS. It sure is noisy. I deleted 100 emails from vendors just this morning. Your buyer has gotten better at ignoring you, and you're going to need a big idea if you want to cut through all that clutter. Austin Lawrence is just the right agency to help you find it. So if your campaigns are falling on deaf eyeballs, let's talk. Visit austinlawrence.com today, and let's build something bigger.
Welcome to the SaaS Backwards Podcast, where we reverse engineer the success of fast-growing SaaS firms and explore strategies CMOs and CEOs are using to drive their businesses forward.
Welcome to SaaS Backwards, a podcast that helps SaaS CEOs and CMOs to accelerate growth and enhance profitability. Our guest today is Alan Zhao, co-founder and head of marketing at Warmly. The platform orchestrates metadata from sales enablement tools, B2B intent, and enrichment tools to identify, track, and connect with website visitors who are ready to convert. Hey, Alan, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And before we get into the topics for today, could you please tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, your background, and Warmly?
Yeah, so I actually started out in finance. I was on the trading floor and I switched over to tech. I joined a company called X.AI before it was X.AI, formerly known as Twitter. This AI tool was an autonomous meeting scheduler. So things scheduled meetings on your behalf. I was one of the business hires and that's where I picked up programming. Fast forward, wanted to start a restaurant with a friend. So started a restaurant, ran that while building restaurant apps on the side. It was pho Vietnamese. Learned a ton about restaurants, small businesses, and how hard it is while building restaurants, apps. And then went over to this program called OnDeck in San Francisco, met my co-founders, and we started a company called Warmly. Four pivots later, it is in its latest iteration today and is successful as ever.
Well, that's great. And you said it's had some prior iterations. What was Warmly before what it is today?
Yeah, we started off as pushpull.community. The idea is a more authentic version of LinkedIn. LinkedIn tells you what you've done, where you've been, but it doesn't tell you where you want to go. And we were two other co-founders from Google, myself coming from restaurants. We didn't know much about B2B SaaS. We're building products. So we built what we thought we liked. And we built a community more for LinkedIn for millennials, essentially. And it grew some traction, but ultimately we realized that people didn't really want another LinkedIn. And so we went through Techstars. We found that B2B was a backbone for the Techstars community. So we decided to do something in B2B. And one of our advisors said, you should try job change tracking. And not knowing anything about job change tracking or B2B or customer success, which was the primary use case we were thinking of, we built this thing. And within a week of building it, we sold our first deal for $99 a month, not knowing how to price it either, by essentially changing a database field during a demo to show that we can capture when someone changed their jobs on LinkedIn. It was that magic moment. Since then, after that point, we had to figure out exactly how we were going to do this at scale. And then we realized we never could scalably do job change tracking. So we moved on to the next thing, which was building one of the first Zoom apps. See my name tag right here, one of the first Zoom apps with our name tag. And we built that when Zoom at the time had 300 million daily active users. So when they built an app store, we thought if we could just get a piece of that, that could be a really interesting business. But again, this was us chasing a solution, not chasing after the problem. So we built a solution. We were excited about the platform I'm building on top of. And at the end of the day, we realized that we couldn't make this a viable business. So we pivoted again into what Warmly is today, which is an autonomous revenue orchestration platform where we pull in metadata from all your different tools, unify it, and then infuse it with the best intent data out there from Sixth Sense, Clearbit, Bombora, and many others, so that you can automatically automate the sales process that salespeople don't need to do, and then loop the salespeople in when it's time for them to have a conversation.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. I think autonomous orchestration is a really interesting idea. And maybe you could just sort of break that down a little bit so people know what it means, because they're going to hear about this, not just in sales automation, but I think that's going to be a thing. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good. So one of the biggest problems that we noticed is that in sales time, all these other words that come afterwards, autonomous revenue orchestration or account-based marketing. And really what we're trying to solve for is time. Salespeople are limited by time. And I've never heard of a sales leader say, oh, I have enough time. I've never heard that before. And ultimately what happens is salespeople these days have a million different tools now. They have contact databases they have to pull from. They have email sequencing tools like Apollo they have to enroll sequences into. Then they have to update the CRM. And then they have video tools. They have a million different tools that they have to use. And they can only do one thing at a time. And yet they're being asked to do 30 things at a time. And so if you only have limited headcount and you have 30 things that you need to do, and if you don't do it in the time that you need to because of, you know, the digital attention span of these days is like 8 seconds, thanks to social media, then you might not have captured your prospect at the point at which they were most interested in buying your tool. So an example of that happening is when someone comes and visits your website. We chose the website because ultimately with all these channels that are coming to the end of their shelf life, like cold email, like ads, I mean, it's very difficult with ads because they're coming much more expensive. It's very difficult cold email because we're always carpet bombing the inbox, you know, circa post 2010, introducing outreach, introducing Zoom info. But ultimately, when someone's interested in your product or service we're offering, they'll come to your website. And it's at that point, if you can capture their attention, you can get on a conversation with them, then you might be able to convert them into the next stage of the sales process.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you going into a little bit about why orchestration would matter. I think you're absolutely right. I haven't met a salesperson that feels like they have abundant time on their hands, nor a sales manager feeling like they have enough people. There's always struggle for growing BDR, SDR, and AE teams, and to provide true time savings, operational efficiency, you know, not only in sales, but we see that if you're a student of the SaaS space, the Trust Radius yearly research last couple of years has been a lot of focus on two things. One of is operational efficiency, and the other is collecting more capabilities in one tool. So I feel like you're really on trend in both ways.
So there's three ways that we see orchestration happening. One way is ZoomInfo, which is acquiring companies, like acquiring Clickagy, acquiring chat tools, acquiring more data tools. They start off as a contact database, but what naturally happened is they needed to upsell into existing customers because they're a public company and they need to improve their net revenue retention. And so naturally they have to improve with other offerings. So they'll acquire Course, now you have call recording. They'll acquire Clickagy, now you have B2B intent. And they are trying to build this like full stack, end-to-end, one-stop shop solution. That's one way. The second way is how Apollo's doing it. And Apollo is trying to build it all in-house. I think Apollo and HubSpot do this very well. They're just going to build it all in-house because they know that if data is siloed, it doesn't communicate with each other, then you're missing out on one of the biggest, most important parts of revenue orchestration, which is like once you have all the metadata on top of each other, then you can really automate efficiently as if a rep were doing it. The problem with this way is that when you have an all-in-one platform, people who are buyers may have existing tools that they like using. Maybe they like using outreach. They're like, oh, I like the outreach sequence tool. I've always liked it. I've always known it. I want to just use outreach. I don't want to rip outreach out, so I have to use Apollo. So the third way, the approach that we adopted is instead of having to build an all-in-one, we'll just integrate with all the existing tools out there that people love and then infuse that with data and then layer on automation orchestration on top. And that's the way that we're approaching it because we think that flexibility is enhanced utility. And it's what we heard from our customers as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to do what I promised I would. I'm going to unpack that just a little bit. From the early days of this podcast and even before we were podcasting, we've worked with SaaS founders. And one of the number one determinants of success is these integrations, right? Making sure that you can be where your customers want to be. And I really agree with you. You know, an all-in-one is compelling if you are really the glue of an entire world, like a HubSpot can be the glue of an entire motion to market, sales, marketing, and success. But for other kinds of SaaS where you're not their entire world, I think you need to have a great integration play. So good for you. Hey, let's dig in a little bit on your different roles at Warmly. So you have this unusual path within Warmly. Marketing wasn't the first functional role you've occupied. Can we talk a little bit about your journey through Warmly and the things you've learned along the way? Because I think you've revealed some of those learnings, but I think how you got there is really interesting.
Yeah, so I start off as the engineer in the team. It was as my two other co-founders, or three co-founders. Karina was the other engineer, I was the other engineer, and we were just coding. And from that, developed into the CTO for about 3 years, and so grew a team of 6 to 7 engineers. Started to realize once we got to the third pivot on the Zoom Apps platform, realized that engineering is actually not the bottleneck of the company at that point. Engineers, we ultimately get to a certain point of cycle time, and then we can produce just about anything. But the problem was we weren't chasing after the right problem. And so being able to identify that and say, like, that's not a problem that's worth solving. There's not a market for this. Maybe there's something else we can do. So I actually ended up, after talking with a salesperson, his name is Jordan Crawford. He's a go-to-market guy. He said that no one has ever not bought because they didn't have a name tag. And he pushed me to actually go become a salesperson to truly understand salespeople's problems. And so I decided to join this company called Octo, which is an NFX portfolio company. And we shared the same investor. So they were receptive towards it. And I said, I'm going to work for free. I'm the CTO at Warmly. My goal is to uncover some hacks for you while I'm there and then bring in a new perspective from an engineering lens. And in the process, I'd love to learn about how you guys do sales. And so I actually flew out and I would, hang out with the VP of sales at the time and just watch this person work, watch this person fire, watch this person struggle with the CRM, getting all the reps to input data so that they can make reports because investors were asking. I would get on calls with the sales reps, the inside sales rep, the AEs. I would be a sales rep myself. I would try to do cold calls and try to book meetings. And it was incredibly difficult. And that's also where I learned about the power law of sales, that 80% of all the money brought in was brought in by 20% of the people. And of the 20% that did that, there's 20% that brought in the 80% of that. So it just, the power law is massive. So I started to see things like the classic go-to-market problem for sales and marketing is, what do you say, who do you say it to, and when do you say it? And with when being the most difficult one to answer, that has remained unanswered, and the what and the who have largely been solved by companies like Zoom Info and Outreach, that you can reach anybody. And really thinking about the when, that's when decided to explore the space some more, like competitors in the space, the competitive landscape, see where we can insert ourselves, and really keying in on the when. And like I said before, the website. The website is the focal point. Someone does not usually come to a website by mistake. And when they're on there, they're thinking about you in that second. And so we decided to build a product on that and moved from this product ideation role into back to being a builder, because it was really just me and another engineer at the time. And the rest of the company was still building name tags. And I needed to prove to the company that this was a viable direction for the business. So CEO Max was like, hey, how about you have Alex, who's the tech lead at the time, let's see what you guys can come up with. It's a Skunkworks project. You're going to be separate from the company. You're not going to distract us. And you have like a quarter to prove this thing out. And so a quarter, it was just me and Alex trying to de-risk it from the engineering side. Like, can we do this? Can we build what I believe would be like a Drift qualified competitor? And can we do the WebRTC thing where we can show a video on the website? So it's as if you're having a Zoom video call right on top of the website. Can we link this with intent data, website de-anonymization data from partners like Sixth Sense? Can we do that? Can we add the script tag? Can we have the chat widget show up? Like all these technical things that we've never done before, de-risk that. And once I had line of sight that this was possible, and this was basically at the end of September, we started September 2022 is when we started doing this. By the end of the year in December, we had our first couple of beta customers using the product. So we tried to move really, really quickly. And by January, we had our first 100,000 ARR. And that's when the rest of the company took notice and they were like, okay, there's definitely something here. We sold this thing for around $500 a month. And at the time, when people just looked at the product, it was basically like, add the script tag to your site. You can see who's coming to your site, companies at first. And then you get Slack notified and then you could chat to them and have a video call right there. That was the first MVP that we got out in about 3 months. So we de-risked most of like the complex pieces of it. The rest of it was more about like classical engineering, building out workflows, which we understand pretty well, building out segments, audience builder, making sure like admin, like these things that we all knew how to do. But the complex pieces were done. And so the next thing I needed to do was to prove out whether or not we could sell it. We could sell it to beta customers because these are folks within my own network or within Warmly's network that were excited by this and gave us conviction at the beginning. So they said, yes, this is going to work for sure. Like, trust me on this. You guys will get to 1 million in ARR by the end of the year. I've seen this play out before. You're meeting the buyers where they're at. That's what our first evangelist said. You're meeting the buyers where they're at. And that is extremely valuable. He he started using it, and he was one of our first case studies. He 3x enterprise pipeline by using this tool, because he would send these massive campaigns to banks, and it would be like a day of them sending these massive outbound campaigns and outreach, and then everyone would pour into the site, and he would pick them off one by one, either messaging them directly through the chat, video calling them, or seeing that they're on the site, knowing exactly who it is, and then going to LinkedIn and saying like, hey, what's up? I saw you might be interested in our product offering. We'll love to chat. And then it's boom, 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 boom. Was able to book meetings in this flurry. So that was our first customer. It gave us a lot of conviction. Moved on to, there's other customers who have different use cases. So I tried to sell it. I started leading sales, lead development as well. And then soon after, we realized that, okay, now that we can sell it, can we retain people? Can we truly deliver value? And so that's when we brought in Max. Max became the sales leader. The rest of the team slowly started coming in. We started moving over engineers, we started moving over the product team to actually have real product process. Because before it was just me and Alex, so we were just hacking away. Let's do this today. Let's do that tomorrow. You do the push, I'll do the commit here, and then we'll merge it. And it's just fast. It's classic, you know, YC founder type mentality. But eventually you need to have process brought in, so, and designs. And then so I started leading customer success with our now head of customer success, Ryan, where we would do everything possible to make sure that our initial customers would get value, because we knew how important case studies were. We knew that if we had 5 marquee case studies, we can go out and we can use that to get more customers who would also get the same value. So it was me, Ryan, had now had a customer success, Derek, who's now our senior marketing manager. And we would divvy up the accounts and say like, you own these 5 accounts, all on these 5 accounts, you own these 6 accounts. And it's doing things that don't scale, but we would be using our product, yes, but we'd also be trying to think about like, what else can we do to ensure that they are getting qualified booked meetings? Because ultimately that's what our tool promised. We said that you use this tool, it's $500 a month. I mean, it's $6,000 a year. How much is your ACV? Oh, it's 10,000. We just need to close you one deal. Like, we can do that. And so we would, in the first month, ensure that they would have a booked meeting, even if it meant that we were cold calling. So back to being an SDR again, have a 5 accounts, see people come to the site, pull the Apollo list down of the buying committee of those companies that came to the site, and then call them, actually call them, like go one by one calling. And like, dude, this takes time. I couldn't believe that people did this without using the sniper approach. They would use the shotgun approach, but these are companies that were exhibiting intent, visiting the pricing page, were active on the site, looking at cases. I was watching them in the live session replay through our product, and I was trying to get to the right person. And it would take 30 minutes just to even like pull the stuff down, call, voicemail. I mean, it's just so much time. And that's when it makes sense. Like, we need this to be not a human. A lot of these things that humans don't need to do can be done by machines. I understand now why we have auto dialers. I understand now why we have all these workflows built out, but it's still kind of a mess. It was a messy process. They were building individually for each company. So we want to generalize that. And so eventually we realized, okay, actually this product, even in its current state, may not be 100% there, but I could see it. There was line of sight at the end of the day. If we just fix these things, if we turn this into, now we coined this term autonomous revenue orchestration platform that did all these things that salespeople didn't need to do. So instead, machines did it, and the salespeople just focused on having conversations or building relationships or being strategic about which accounts to go after. If they just focus on that, then this product can work. That's the vision. Like, you know, just looking at it, thinking about it, this is going to work given enough time. So the next step was to unbottleneck marketing, because by that point, we brought in a head of sales, and Max was doing a great job leading the SDR team. The head of sales is building out all the sequences. He was just building the palace. And we started coming up against our competitors, of course. Like, we knew this was going to happen, like Qualified, like Drift, and a couple others. And those guys, as you move up market, people are familiar with Drift and Qualified, and they would look at the solution that we built, and they'd say, like, what makes you different from these other guys?
Sure. That's sort of the next step. When you have a little bit of traction, people are trying to get a frame of reference for you, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so it was very difficult to say, because how people interpreted us were like, oh, you're Sixth Sense and Drift and Lead Feeder had a baby. And then we started saying that we're Sixth Sense, Drift, and Lead Feeder had a baby. And what we can only really compete on at that point, what I realized was price, because they weren't going to rip out Drift. They weren't going to rip out Lead Feeder. I mean, that's like the operational cost to them is like, it's not a priority. So I'm not going to do it. Like, I already have these things that work. Why would I rip this other thing out? Am I just saving a couple $1,000s? Like, my time is a little bit worth more than that, especially since I have to hit these quarterly goals. And so we needed to reframe the messaging. In my mind, like, I started getting on these sales calls again after I was in customer success. I was like thinking to myself, like, why are these deals closing? Constantly I'm being told the same thing. Like, oh, you're Drift, but cheaper. Oh, you're Drift, but Sixth Sense, but cheaper. the best we could do was like, but we're a fraction of the cost of each of these. Like you pay Drift, lowest tier now is 30,000. For us at the time, it was 6,000. Like this seemed to me like a no-brainer. But even then, they still decided like, it's not a priority, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's when I decided to talk with Max about this. Max was like, hey, I think we should move you over to marketing. It's like, that's a great idea. Because I think it's a framing problem right now. People coming into these meetings, they have no idea who we are. And we have to spend basically 30 minutes trying to do a discovery call and then also convince them that this is a good idea. And by that point, they might be a little bit confused. Like I was coming into this thinking I was getting a cheaper Drift, or I'm actually not sure what this is. So better would be to them coming into the meeting and knowing exactly what they're going to get and why they want it. And we found that when that was the case, the deals closed a lot faster.
What kind of narrative did you use to help frame that? Are you guys fans of the challenger sale, challenger customer mindset?
I mean, yeah.
Were you sort of trying to reframe people's vision for how this function works?
Yeah, at the time it was just we were Drift but cheaper, or we were three tools consolidated together into one. So you would save on costs. We were faster to implement. And those two things together, like faster to implement, cheaper, and all in one solution so you don't have to toggle between tools, actually did pretty well after a certain point. Because the idea was you had bought this tool, Drift, and then you had bought a different tool. And one person, demand gen leader, said it the best. He was like, most of these companies don't even get 7% value out of the tools that they buy because they end up taking a month to implement. The person that bought it after a year leaves, and then the next person that picks it up has to maintain these complex workflows. And then that person leaves, and pretty soon you're managing tools for the sake of managing tools. So you don't get the full value out even though you bought it. And so for us, what he found really fascinating is like you just had to add a script tag to the site. You one-click integrate your CRM, your outreach, and then you're basically done. That's the integration process. That takes minutes. Slack integrate, one-click, set up a Slack channel, that takes minutes as well. Nowadays, it's a little bit more complicated, but at the time it was very simple. And his idea was by making it simple to start and then stitching together these complicated workflows so that when someone comes to the site, you can see in a live session what they're doing. And then you could chat to them directly. You would get notified and data would send to the CRM. Like that just automated a lot of the workflows that people had to do. And so this seamless user experience was what he really liked. And that ultimately evolved into this idea of like, well, we can make the whole thing very seamless. Autonomous revenue orchestration.
I want to kind of shift the conversation a little bit. I think you gave people a lot of insight into the idea of a really almost activist founder, like getting on each bottleneck as they come instead of trying to push it off on someone else. So I think that's a really interesting part of your narrative. You're talking about focusing on people's websites, on companies' websites, which I think is where any intentional buyer ends up, right? They have to get there at some point. But the data is 95%+ of the people who are there don't take action that we in marketing might want them to. Can you just sort of unpack a little bit about what that experience is and how it leads into the orchestration? Because you know, you sort of described it as part of the product development and this journey you were on as a founder. But I want to retrace the steps just a little bit, because all of us in marketing know that between 1% and 5% of our visitors do what we want them to do on a CTA. So what about those other 95% or more? How is that really being impacted, and what's the lift?
So there's these concentric circle graphics that you can imagine that, you know, like 100% of people that come to the site, of that only maybe, like you said, 1% to 5% actually fill out the forms, which is probably what the marketing team wants. But oftentimes the rest of the 99% to 95% that come to the site, they were there for a reason. And so we know that much. They came from ads, or they came from email outreach campaigns, or they were just browsing because they heard about your company from LinkedIn Social, whatever the case. So of the 95% that didn't book a meeting, a portion of that is your ICP. But you never knew about it because maybe you didn't have Warmly, or maybe you didn't have some sort of site de-anonymization software. Could be 50%, could be 60%. You have no idea. Of that 50% to 60%, there's also a percentage of that that is in market to buy your tool right now. Like, of course, we always know that 5% of your market is in market to buy. It's also interesting coincidence that 5% is also what fills out forms. But at any rate, so
they may not be the same 5%, right?
Not, then probably not. If you covered your total TAM, maybe they would be. So what's also interesting is that of the 1% to 3% that fill out forms may not necessarily be the same whatever percent that are in market to buy. They may not overlap at all. They may overlap a little bit. And so step one is to just know who's coming to the site that is your ICP. And then step two is to know of those who's actually in market. And then you can sort of cater the right experience for them at the right time. And then we take an omni-channel approach. I can talk more about that, but those are the two problems to solve that I think a lot of people don't realize that they can do right now. It's the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah, the when, which you started the narrative a while back, is really important, right? You need to speak to people when they're either trying to figure out a problem or they're trying to find a solution, right? You want to get them when they're mentally engaged in that. So how does that get us to the autonomous part? Let's say that Alan comes to my website and I can see Alan's journey. And then what happens that gets you into an autonomous orchestration motion?
So once we've identified, and we do 65% of companies, 15% of individuals being able to be identified on your website. Once we know who you are, if we can get to the person, great. If we get to the company, that's fine too. Then you go to a filtering mechanism from the segments that we built for you, which is, do you fall into the ICP company or do you fall into the ICP persona type? And if so, then you'll be delivered a different experience. So first is, if you're not an ICP or you're a competitor, or this is someone that you don't want to talk to, then don't deliver any experience at all. This is, you know, like I said before, time is so valuable. So don't even bother. Don't even spend compute resources on those people, especially not competitors. Okay, so those are the bad leads. Then the cold ones that we call cold are companies that are ICP, but haven't really shown intent. They haven't really engaged with the website much. This may be their first visit. Using the Bombora integration, we noticed that they haven't really researched any topics that your company covers. So they don't have high intent research, intent for your product potentially. Then we would show an inbound chatbot. This is the classic Drift chatbot. So we basically built Drift for the SMB. And so this was small widget to the bottom right-hand side of the corner. People already know this. Click in, they can choose their own adventure and qualify. If it makes sense, then talk to a salesperson. And then the salesperson can get looped in over Slack, jump in, or we show them the demo scheduling link. That's cold. If they're warm being, for example, and there's many different characteristics for this, of course, depending on your company, but it could be they visited the site, they visited the pricing page, they're a closed loss deal, or they're not an active deal, and they have some research intent. They have three people who visited the website already from the same company in different regions. So maybe their people are passing this around, like, hey, check this company out. They seem pretty cool, but they haven't booked a meeting. Okay, great. Then we would enroll them. We would have the AI chat automatically reach out and say something. And something, usually it's actually a very human message. It's not a long drawn out. It's usually, hey, what's up? Saw that you were on the pricing page. Let me know if you have any questions. And then the way it's sent out, it's as if the rep was sending it. So it's, if you see a human on there with a little blinking green light, the reason for that is the rep actually is on. He's live. He's just doing other things. But the moment that you respond, the rep gets notified. It's like, okay, great. This is a hot lead. This is my ICP. They clearly raised their hand answering a question about pricing. I need to jump in and take over. And so that's the AI chat. This thing's not on all the time. You set the hours for it. During the hours that the rep's available, they can jump on, and that means they're not distracted by constantly being pinged about people being on the site. So that's AI chat if they're warm. Then if they're extremely hot, which is they're exhibiting high research intent, they're an active deal. Like, these are people you shouldn't miss. They're an active deal. It could be the buyer who's on the site. And of course, they visit the pricing page, they're active for 30 seconds or more, 5 or 6 more visits, and they've, you know, responded to emails. They're on the site right now. You should go talk to them right now. You're not busy. They're not busy, probably. They're looking at your site. Have a conversation through the video chat. Those are the major tiers, hot, medium, cold, bad of leads. And this is one workflow. The last thing I'll mention, not only from the website, is, like I said before, when the SDR customer success squad was customer successing, sometimes people will hit the site and then they'll bounce and you didn't catch up in time. Then we would want to follow up with an email. So we automated that process too. Like, if a company comes to the website, let's say this was a cold company, you would set up these email sequences for basically engaging people who came to the site. It doesn't necessarily have to be as on the nose as, hey, saw you on the site. It could just be like, you might have this problem. And we would automatically, through, you can integrate your own Apollo API key, you can use us as well, use our own prospecting tool, but we would find the buying committee of the personas that you want to target and then automatically enroll them in the specific sequences that are customized to each persona. So if a Salesforce came and visited our website, we would find the buying committee automatically of all the sales leaders, because we sell to sales leaders and heads of marketing. And then we would enroll them into sequences specific to them. And it just happens that in the background automatically. So every single day, people are getting sent out emails that are customized for them based off intent that we see.
That's great. I really appreciate you doing that, because I think it's a little impenetrable. Like, the words are one thing, but the actual what happens is great to learn. So I'd love to just dig in a little bit about the AI chat. And we did talk about this when we prepped. How is your AI chat built? And what are the possibilities of the way you're building AI into it?
Yeah, the AI chat is, we basically pull in all the context from all your different systems. So your CRM system, what website activity they've done, the actual website of the prospect who's visiting the site, any previous chat engagements you guys have had. So all that context is pulled in together, and it's almost as if you were implementing a ChatGPT prompt. You would bake this in from the UI on our end, but you would say things like, you are the best SDR. Here are examples of what you should say in these situations. Here's how you're supposed to respond in the ChatGPT prompt. This is the first thing that you say, prompt one. This is the second thing that you say, prompt two. And then here's all the context. The context is already baked in. That's already seeded on our end. And the prompt is what you typically customize. And so we're automating the first two outreach messages to people on the site. And the reason we did this was because we noticed that in the beginning, we were trying to deliver value. We were the ones that were actually trying to get on video calls with people and chat to them. And the number one thing we needed to prove was that we were human. That's it. We just needed to do, if we could prove that we were human and we're chatting to you, we're not a bot. I mean, it was so funny because we had one person who worked in Brazil that we hired to basically do this for our customers. And he would turn on the video and he would raise like a whiteboard and say, not a bot, not a bot, not a bot. And he was fast enough, he would write the name of the company and like, company, not a bot. If they knew that we weren't a bot, the conversion rates skyrocketed. But everyone's so desensitized to drift.
There's a funny commercial on television now with the woman who played Tanya on The White Lotus. It's a Discover commercial. And, you know, she calls customer service and she asks, you know, are you not a bot? And the customer service rep asks her, how do I know you're not a bot? Yeah, I think you've tapped into something that I think is very much in the zeitgeist. You need to make people believe that they're actually talking to a human. I want to kind of move on just a little bit and bring you back to your role, both as a founder and marketing head. You know, what are you doing to help drive revenue for Warmly? What's working to get qualified traffic to your website, landing pages and other assets that you're trying to orchestrate for prospects?
Well, what happened in the beginning, once I started working on marketing, was our inbound was probably 15 a month. And then after we did the announcement, like we call it the lightning strike, and this is, I'm sure people are familiar with the book, Play Bigger. Someone just said, you should just read this book, Play Bigger, because this is how you do the whole category creation process. And I looked down, I was like, oh, that makes sense. We should do category creation. We need to stand out. Category winner takes 75% of the market. That sounds pretty good. And the rest have to fight for the scraps. Like, I don't want that. So we set out to try to create this new category of ours. And it was going to be around revenue orchestration. Something orchestration related, because that was the phrasing, that was the word. I see it sometimes, but no one really occupied it. You search it up on Google and you can look at like the monthly search volume for revenue sales orchestration. It's very low. It's like 20. So people weren't searching for it, but we just knew naturally this is where the world was going to head to. So start with that, just that idea, like that's what we're going to occupy, that phrase, that category, and then trying to build a narrative around that. And the narrative was basically that there's already all these intent and all these data tools out there, but there's nothing that really stitches it all together and orchestrates on top to maximize the return of all these tools and people. And if it was available, it'd only be available for the enterprises. It's available for companies that are able to purchase 6 cents demand base, which is not cheap. But then the rest of the market, SMB is 95% of it. They don't have the tools, people, playbooks, knowledge, know-how to implement these things. And they also are the ones that need it the most probably. So we decided to build for that market. So we made that story. We launched the Series A announcement on October 16th, 2023. And then from that point, our inbound went from 15 to basically 135 sustained month over month. And the reason for that is suddenly the way we did this was we made the announcement and we got all of our advisors just pulled together, everyone in our network, anybody who we knew who was like, you know, sales influencer to buy into this vision. And then for one day, we took over LinkedIn. One day, everyone was talking about us. And then from that point, the echoes of that was we would come up in conversation in Slack communities. I would see this happening and prevailingly. Like, you guys ever heard of Warmly? Or someone would say, what do you guys think about Qualified or Drip? Oh, have you heard of Warmly? These are organic conversations that I never prompted or pushed for, but it would just start happening naturally. And so that worked out really well. And from that lightning strike, we've just been able to, instead of spending all this time sending a bunch of emails that say, like, do you want to buy? Do you want to buy? Do you want to buy? It felt like we had some momentum going. And then the rest of my time was just focused on this content factory, about continuing to tell the story, continuing to build SEO, because we knew that you can't just live off lightning strikes. Investors don't want to see spikes. They want to see something sustained. So the next thing was partnerships and content. These are the two things. And content here was actually focused on video. This is a personal bet, but I just think that video is this new not even new medium, but it's slowly making its way over into B2B. It's not even slow anymore. It's starting to happen pretty quickly. But at the time it was, okay, let's start investing into YouTube. Let's start investing into short form content. Let's start investing into like really cool product videos. I take a lot of inspiration from companies like HockeyStack, who built B2B for Netflix, and their approach. And of course, the Challenger customer's approach, which is making sure that you really understand the problem that people have, the real problem, and then deriving the key insight that people aren't really thinking about. And then basically having all the content that you produce, whether it's SEO, video, or whatever, link back into the key insight so that this is still content that converts. And it's not just content for the sake of content. And then distributing it massively through LinkedIn announcements for product launches. We tell a story, made like a really cool, interesting product demo video. Do it yourself using Screen Studio and CapCut. And we put 3 to 5 blog posts out, SEO optimized a week. We have our own podcast and we have these massive product launches. And then we're going to do a Warmly movie in Mexico City when we go down there for a company offsite. We're going to have all the people in our company, the salespeople, the marketing people, the SDRs, everyone's going to play a role in describing this problem. We're going to paint the picture of exactly what it looks like when your company is suffering from this time problem. Like, people don't have time to juggle so many things. Marketing can't agree with sales. Product is behind on the deadlines. Engineering is being asked to deliver too much. Time is the biggest thing. Like, what if we can, at least for the sales side, what if we orchestrate it appropriately?
You know, I love landing on that. I think solving for the real problem, not the product benefit or product feature, I think is a really great place to land our episode. There was a lot in this one. Alan Zhao, I just want to say thanks so much. If people want to reach you or learn more about your company, how can they do that?
Well, we do have a podcast called Revenue Rebels. So if you'd like to learn more about some of the folks in our series, you can check us out there. It's on Spotify and Apple. And we have a media page, which is where we're going to be. It's like the one-stop shop to see all of our video content. We try to put a lot on there. And if you want to learn about our product or category or problem, the movies, the funny entertainment type material, then you could stop by there as well.
Great. If people want to reach me, I'm on LinkedIn/in/Ken Lempit. And our podcast, SaaS Backwards, is distributed wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And Alan, if people want to reach you, how can they do that?
LinkedIn's the best way. You can search me up on LinkedIn, Alan Zhao, work out Warmly, and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for being a great guest on SaaS Backwards.
Thanks so much, Ken. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the SaaS Backwards podcast, brought to you by Austin Lawrence Group. We're a growth marketing agency that helps SaaS firms reduce churn, accelerate sales, and generate demand. Learn more about us at www.austinlawrence.com. You can email Ken Lempit at kl@austinlawrence.com about any SaaS marketing or customer retention subject. We hope you'll subscribe, and thanks again for listening.